We've been hearing for the past few weeks about the voyage the world's Carolyn Beeler took recently to a remote stretch of Antarctica. The trip aboard an icebreaker was part of a 5-year research project exploring the fate of a Key West Antarctic glacier. Well, today Carolyn's going to tell us about another part of that project, an expedition she was not able to join herself. But lucky for us, Carolyn, you sent along a proxy, didn't you?
Right. So this was not an expedition that journalists were allowed on, but I thought, why not send along an audio recorder with one of the scientists? So what we're going to hear now is a story entirely from the perspective of the head of this tiny research team that flew to the edge of the same huge glacier that I saw from the sea. It's a spot that no one's ever been to before, but it could end up being really important to basically the whole world, especially our coastlines.
And this is the Thwaites Glacier. And remind us why the Thwaites Glacier is just so important.
Right. So Thwaites sits at the middle of the West Antarctic ice sheet, this Mexico-sized piece of ice that holds enough ice to raise global sea levels by about 11 feet. Thwaites is kind of the keystone. It's the center. It's melting fast. And if it all goes, it's thought that it could take much of West Antarctica along with it. So this team of 4 people went out near the edge of this glacier where the ice juts off of Antarctica's bedrock and out into the sea. It was led by a scientist named Sridhar Anandakrishnan from Penn State University. So right before he left to go to Antarctica, I shipped Sridhar some recording equipment. I showed him how to use it over video Skype. And he kept rolling and taping through the trip, including during some terrible weather that they had to deal with. And even though this was really just a scouting mission for future field seasons, they actually discovered something new and pretty important about the glacier.
That's amazing. All right, Carolyn, take it away.
So Sridhar Anandakrishnan and his team's journey started at this tiny field camp in the middle of Antarctica. They waited there for about a week for weather that was good enough to fly out to Thwaites Glacier.
All right, it's Tuesday, January, 8th? Looks like they've given us the go-ahead to fly this morning. All right, Kaya, so what's the plan this morning?
All right, so we're going to get on the plane, fly. So my name is Kaya Riverman, and I am a postdoc at the University of Oregon.
The science team, Sridhar and Kaya, is with 2 mountaineers whose main job is to make sure they don't fall into crevasses on Thwaites. Seriously. They're Mike Roberts, who's from New Zealand.
So they could just do it as an overflight.
And Andy Bond, an American.
I think we're good. We just did our last checkoff.
Okay. Let's do this. We're on the airplane now.
Well, that kind of works.
What is that?
This is a safety guide.
You're using the safety guide to scrape the windows?
No, but it's for the New Zealand Antarctic program. It's not
okay.
For the U.S.
In that case, it must not apply.
In a minute here, the pilots are going to go through their checklist, and then we'll head out of here. It's about a 2-hour flight.
They fly off from the base camp 300 miles toward the edge of West Antarctica. That's where the continent's ice sheets are being melted by a warming sea. Sridhar will tell most of the story. I'll jump in from time to time. He starts when the plane dropped his team off at Thwaites. They landed on a piece of ice the size of Florida. That's one of the most isolated places on Earth.
There you are, standing on a chunk of flat ice. The airplane is going away and you're waving bye-bye to it. And it's a scary feeling, but a very exhilarating feeling at the same time.
Testing, testing. I think we're going okay. 18, 19, okay. Okay, so we're on the Thwaites Glacier ice shelf.
We landed!
You realize I am completely alone. There's only the 4 of us here and there's nobody else around. And particularly on Thwaites Glacier, the nearest people were 300 miles away, and that was 20 of them. And that is a truly terrifying idea if you think about it too much, and so you don't think about it a whole lot.
Okay, it's our second day here on the Thwaites Glacier ice shelf. It's about 10 o'clock at night. There is just blue sky all the way around. No wind. It's quite cold, about 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So we're at our camp. I see my cook tent, and then we have our sleeping tents. It's perfectly flat where we are, but there's a magnificent ridge just to the south of us. That's what we call the grounding line of Thwaites, which is a pretty remarkable spot to be at.
The spot that Sridhar's standing there looking at is sort of the key to the glacier's future. It's where the glacier stops being grounded, literally sitting on the ground, the bedrock under Antarctica, and extends out into the sea.
It rises about 300 feet over the course of about 2 or 3 miles.
So not the ice rises up there because there's a ridge in the seafloor right underneath it. That ridge is acting like a break on the glacier. It's holding the ice back from flowing out faster and faster into the sea. When I talked to Sridhar about it after he got back, he spoke about this spot's importance in really stark terms.
What we were looking at was Thwaites Glacier's last defense against warming. So the glacier is stable as long as the grounding line stays on that ridge. If it were to step back from that ridge, then it would contribute enormously to sea level. And boy, oh boy, as a glaciologist, you talk about the grounding line, you model it, and I had never in my life expected to see it right there, just visible to us.
I could stand here for a long, long time, but I think I'm probably gonna end this and go to bed. But the only sound is the crunch of your footsteps around here.
Warm ocean water under the ice that Sridhar is walking over is flowing toward the grounding line that he just saw and melting the glacier. This glacier that could flood coastal cities around the world. And Sridhar's team is here to help figure out how fast that might happen. Next year, they'll be sinking underwater probes through the ice sheet. This year, they're doing seismic testing with small explosions to find the best places to do that.
Hi, it's Monday, 14th of January. We're on Thwaites grounding zone.
We lay out geophones on the surface of the snow, set off an explosive. The sound energy from that explosive shot goes down through the ice, through the water column, comes back to us, and is recorded by the geophones. That process tells us how thick the ice column is, how thick the water column is.
And that is the sound of Kaya working while I stand here holding the microphone.
Well, I'm digging a hole maybe 3 feet deep.
I wouldn't say 3 feet.
No, but see, it is down there.
And Kaya and I went out there first thing to slant the geophones.
And then we do that 47 more times.
And the next day, Andy and I went off to a second location.
So yesterday we loaded all the holes with high explosive.
Quick time check, 21, 36, 26.
And now we're going to detonate. Okay, he's arming the high voltage. 10 seconds to go.
So drilling 10 feet into a glacier that's on the verge of collapse and sticking explosives into it and detonating them, does this hurt the glacier?
That's a very good question. So the glacier itself is about 2,000 feet thick at that spot.
Glaciologist Sridhar Anandakrishnan says drilling small holes, even packing them with explosives, doesn't weaken the glacier or contribute to its collapse.
Less than a pinprick for Thwaites Glacier.
I'll shut down and wrap up here and then come help you guys shovel. Good morning. It's Thursday the 17th, about 6 a.m. I'm going to wake up in a minute. Get out of my sleeping bag. It's always the hardest part of the day.
So when we were out there working, we would work from breakfast.
All right, time to motivate. Here we go.
Really, as long as we thought it was safe and viable to do.
Two fingers and we know.
And then we'd come back in the evening and then start cooking dinner.
Oh, it is a nice view. I like that sort of reddish tint on the horizon. With the boosters and detonators in the foreground.
Nothing like some casual explosives on the horizon to make your...
So Sridhar, Kaya Riverman, and the two mountaineers worked for about a week on West Antarctica's Thwaites Glacier. Sridhar kept recording audio through a lot of it. They finished all their seismic testing and were all set to fly out the next day.
So it's Thursday, January 17th. We're still at grounding zone. The weather forecasters got it right.
They said we're getting a storm, and the winds picked up overnight.
So you hear this big storm is coming.
We'd hoped to get out this morning, but the flight was canceled.
You prep camp, and then it's time to hunker down.
So when the winds are blowing as hard as they are, 30, 40, 50 miles per hour, ordinary things become incredibly difficult. Just walking from one tent to another tent.
It's kind of like that mental image of someone opening up a furnace and the, like, fiery blast and sparks blowing out at them, except in our case it's the fiery, icy blast of snow and wind.
You almost can't see the other tent.
You can't stand up straight. You can't walk straight. I had a moment of worrying that it was just going to pull me off into the abyss.
The next thing that's problematic is when you have to take a whiz, as it were. What's the proper word here that I can use on PRI?
I have yet to master the art of peeing into a Nalgene.
And this is particularly hard for women.
It's a harrowing experience a little bit, because you have to pull down your pants in this, which inevitably fills them with snow, so then you pull them back up and you've just got snow all down your pants.
Finally, you've done all these things. You've taken a pee. You've walked hand in hand from tent one to tent
okay,
two.
Okay, you're clear.
Thank you.
Now you have to open up the sleeping tent and crawl into it. And it has this round tunnel-like entrance.
And now she is crawling in through the tunnel, which, with the wind howling as it is, brings a great deal of snow along with it. That's quite all right.
Once you've crawled into the tent, now you're safe. It's cold, 10, 15 degrees Fahrenheit, but you have sleeping bags. And we knew that we would be spending many, many hours in there.
We're not quite sure when this will die down, obviously. It's just this freight train sound.
We crawled into our tents about 10 or 11 in the morning, and then we were there until the following day, until about 8 or 10 in the morning. I've been to the Antarctic more than 20 times, and this really was the worst storm I've been in.
Well, quite a difference 12 hours can make. The winds have dropped considerably. We spent the day in the Endurance tent, chatting, watching a movie. Two movies, that's right, two movies. Had a nice dinner, and we're getting ready for bed. If the weather continues to moderate, and the weather's good at the fueling site, then we might have an airplane tomorrow. But that's a lot of ifs. Anyways, that's all for now.
A plane did come the next day. With all the waiting and weather delays, the trip to Thwaites Glacier took almost a month, for just a week of actual research. When he was back home, lead scientist Sridhar Anandakrishnan told me that just shows how difficult it is to learn anything about the natural world and how it's changing.
Every piece of knowledge is hard fought, and we have to make the best of it, and hopefully people will find value in what we've learned.
And what is your hope for this data that you fight so hard for?
This particular project is to try and understand and project what Thwaites Glacier is going to contribute to sea level over the next century.
Sridhar's work is part of a 5-year international quest to answer that question. Already, his team has found something that doesn't bode well for the future of the glacier. They found the underwater cavity, at least in the spot they were working in, is really big. That means there's plenty of room for warm water to circulate underneath the glacier and melt it from below. But Sridhar hopes this work does more than just describe what's going on in this remote corner of Earth.
More broadly, if we can make some definitive statements about what Thwaites Glacier is going to do to sea level over the next century, we can make an alternate statement saying if we reduce our carbon emissions by this amount, well, maybe its contribution to sea level will be reduced. So ultimately, what I'd like to be able to say is out of this process, we have a couple of alternate future timelines.
Which of those alternate futures we choose is then up to us. For The World, I'm Carolyn Beeler.
Special thanks to Sridhar Anandakrishnan for recording that audio from Thwaites Glacier. You can read more of Carolyn's stories from her expedition to Thwaites at theworld.org/Antarctica.